Welcome to The Intersection. I'm Mark Riley, and I want to thank you all for listening to my podcast. I don't want to dwell too long on President Trump's disastrous Tulsa rally last weekend, if you want to call it a rally. With this president, time seems to move on at warp speed. One thing to take from it, though, his racist use of the term Kung Flu. There's obviously no excuse for it, and saying others use the term Chinese virus to describe COVID-19, as his press secretary did, just a weak attempt at some type of deflection. However, the next step in the Trump show is John Bolton's book. The Room Where It Happened is already at the top of the bestseller lists, and suffice to say, it does not paint a flattering portrait of the man in the White House. He did make, Trump that is, make an effort to stop its publication, which failed. Make no mistake, Bolton is no knight in shining armor. He's a straight-up war hawk who, if he had his way, could have launched the United States into World War III. There's also the issue of whether he refused to go on the record with Congress because he thought he'd make millions from this book. That may be questionable in and of itself, since the court decision allowing the book's publication did say he used classified information in telling a damning narrative of presidential incompetence. Yet beyond Bolton's book, Trump's complete lack of fitness for his job is on full display with each passing day. Take, for example, the question of coronavirus testing. Trump told the Tulsa rally that he'd ask that testing be slowed down. The White House and trade negotiator Peter Navarro later both said Trump made the statement in jest. That's right, he was kidding during a pandemic. Then Trump flipped and said he didn't joke. He was not joking when he said that. Vice President Mike Pence tried to play it down the middle, saying it was a passing observation from the president. Then Kelly McEnany, you remember her, the press secretary, told reporters that, quoting here, "Any suggestion that testing has been curtailed is not rooted in fact." But you see, that might have settled matters. Except that Donald Trump turned back around and told a reporter that if testing did slow, the administration would be ahead of things. Now that's part of what's happened in Trump world of late. It's not all, however. You may have heard about the firing of United States Attorney Jeffrey Berman, who ran the very powerful and very high-profile Southern District U.S. Attorney's Office. That's the Southern District of New York. You may also remember that Trump said he was not involved in the abrupt and clumsy firing, laying that blame on Attorney General Bill Barr. Then McEnany changed messaging, saying the president did, in fact, sign off on Berman's sacking. As the great Casey Stengel once said, "Can't anybody here play this game?" Back to Bolton for a quick minute. After bad-mouthing his book, he called Bolton a wacko. He was asked by Paula Reed of CBS News why he kept hiring wackos and liars, because he has, in fact, called people who were part of his administration at one time and who have said less than flattering things about him both wackos and liars. Trump, when asked the question, simply stared off into space. This is, after all, the commander-in-chief of the most powerful nation on the planet. Yet it looks like no matter how many lackeys he has shilling for him, both in the administration and in his campaign, he's lost the plot, plain and simple. And there's more to come, believe it or not. His niece, Mary Trump, is getting ready to drop a book at the end of July. It's called Too Much and Never Enough: How My Family Created the World's Most Dangerous Man. You can sort of tell by the title it's not too complimentary about number 45. His response? She's not allowed to write a book. Seems she signed a non-disclosure agreement back in 2001. I haven't heard yet if her publisher, Simon & Schuster, has decided to go ahead with releasing the book anyway. Trump himself hasn't read it, and by the way, he badmouthed John Bolton's book, and when he did, almost nobody asked if he actually read the 562-page opus. My guess is he didn't. Donald Trump, you see, seems to have a bit of a problem with attention span. I don't know how people can, with a straight face, say this man is in any way, shape, or form competent to run this great country. The coronavirus stuff alone should be enough to disqualify him. Now, they had the chance, Congress did, to impeach him, but his lackeys in the Senate, led by Mitch McConnell, refused to do so, voting more or less straight along party lines, not to impeach, not so much to impeach because the House impeached him, but the Senate refused to remove him from office. I wonder whether some of those folks at this point might not want to rethink that particular decision. With each passing day, he doesn't look frail. Let me be real about it. A man doesn't look frail, but he certainly looks frazzled. And for a president of the United States to look frazzled, as he did when he got off the helicopter after coming back from Tulsa, that's sad. That is truly, truly sad. And he looked sad. And if he wasn't, well, I don't want to say anything too crass about the man. But if he wasn't who he was or who he is, you might even feel a modicum of pity for the guy. But that passes very, very quickly because Donald Trump is not one, I repeat, not one to be pitied. He is sad. He is incompetent. He really is not any better at forming sentences or, for example, checking out policy briefings and that sort of thing, then he accuses Joe Biden of being. And Joe Biden was vice president of the United States for 8 years. Some of this sleepy Joe stuff is going to come back to bite Donald Trump in the butt at the rate he's going. I would be very, very curious to see what Mary Trump's book is all about. Is it sour grapes? Maybe it is. I mean, he did get sued by her and other members of the Trump family over his father, Fred Sr.'s will. And Trump's answer to that was to cut off health care, not to Mary's kid, but to one of the other kids. I think it was Fred Trump III, who had a very serious problem. Now, if you want to talk about being heartless, you see now where his lack of empathy for DACA people or others comes from. If you would cut off health care to a child because you were mad at their parents, you know that this is a man who literally would stop at nothing to achieve an agenda. And, you know, sooner or later, people are going to start going back over exactly what he has done in terms of the national debt, in terms of a border wall that has extraordinary amounts of money that has been spent on it. And the Mexicans, as far as I know, have not contributed a dime. Do you remember when he said on the campaign trail, Mexico will pay for the wall? As they say in Brooklyn, not hardly. But you see, Donald Trump is full of empty promises. He certainly took care of his people as far as the tax cut was concerned. The richest people in the country made out and continue to make out like bandits. And the stimulus that he gave to people after the advent of COVID-19 has long since run out, and people are up against the wall in a lot of places in America, up against the wall. The sad part is that there are some people who think Donald Trump actually cares one way or the other if they're up against the wall. The plain fact of the matter is he could care less. What he cares about, and I've said this in previous podcasts, and I will continue to say it, what he cares about is Donald Trump, and only Donald Trump. When we come back, Confederate flags and statues, and why they need to disappear yesterday. This is The Intersection. Join the conversation on my Facebook page at Mark Riley Media. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Intersection. For those of you who are counting, America's Civil War ended 155 years ago. Some people seem to think the war ended last week, the way they defend the traitorous losing side, that would be the Confederacy. As of this month, there are nearly 1,800 monuments, statues, and other symbols of the Confederacy in America. Several have been taken down in response to the Black Lives Matter movement, but there are still many left, and each of them is an affront, not just to Black Americans, but to America in general. Ask yourself the following question. Do you think there's a Hitler Boulevard in Berlin, a statue to Joseph Goebbels? What about Hermann Goering? The fact is, there are no symbols of these awful human beings anywhere in Germany. There should be no symbols of those who led the fight to maintain slavery anywhere in America either. Two words sum up why there are still so many left in the 21st century: white supremacy. Confederate iconography has always been about instilling fear in Black people. For those who think they were erected in the immediate aftermath of the Civil War, think again. Most of these statues, symbols, and images went up between 1890 and 1950. They exist in 31 states, far more than the 11 that made up the Confederacy. People should also remember that it was a protest against the statue of General Robert E. Lee in Charlottesville, Virginia, that cost a young woman her life in 2017. Not to mention, and we ought to point this out, there was a statue of Confederate General Nathan Bedford Forrest. Now, why is that significant? First of all, it was in Memphis, Tennessee. I think there may still be one in Nashville, but there was one in Memphis. Memphis has a pretty fair share of Black people. But Nathan Bedford Forrest, in addition to being a Confederate general, was the first Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan. Finally moved in 2017. The same year that young woman lost her life protesting a Robert E. Lee statue. Is a human life worth a statue? Worth trying to construct a history that in fact did not exist? These people have statues because they were considered as worthy people, as virtual nobility to some people. Why? I do not know. Why the Confederacy is treated as anything other than what it was, a traitorous effort to separate certain states from America because those states believed in Black people as property and did not believe in Black people as human beings. This is an example, all of these monuments. It's about making some white people, not all white people, you know, a lot of times folks take umbrage because people tend to lump all white people together. I don't. I know there are white people that are not feeling good about themselves when they stare at a monument to a Confederate general or a Confederate colonel or Confederate anything else. What does amaze me sometimes is the lack of empathy that some white people do not exhibit for Black people. Now, if you assume that the two times that the Confederate statues went up in American history were between once in 1890 through about 1920, and again from 1950 into the Civil Rights Movement, you realize that these Confederate statues were constructed deliberately to send a message to Black people. That message was, stay in your place. Don't try to register and vote. Don't try to hold elective office. I don't care how many people in your particular town happen to be Black. It was about white supremacy, plain and simple. And if it were really about history, and I hear so many people, too many people online, well, you're destroying our history. Even the president talks that trash. Well, if that were the case, then the full history would have been told many, many years ago. The full history of Nathan Bedford Forrest, the full history of Robert E. Lee, the full history of all the other Confederate generals and colonels, etc., who have had monuments constructed to their traitorous nature. But hey, you know, let's say for the sake of argument, you don't want to call them traitors. Are they deserving? As people who believed, to the point that they fought and died for it, people who believed that black people, Americans, are not, in fact, human beings. That's what they believed. It's as simple as that. They didn't put this stuff up to try and unite the country. They put it up because they felt that black people, in seeing this stuff, would not look to try and make change quickly, or in fact, if ever. Because that shroud of the Confederacy, that shroud of all these people who believed they were slaves and therefore less than human, would stay forever, etched in the minds of white Southerners, and not just white Southerners. Again, 31 states, count them, 31, have to this day some kind of monument to the people of the Confederacy. The Confederacy was only 11 states. What's the excuse for the other 20? The fact of the matter is, and you know, I will say this, and I know some people may disagree, I am less concerned with some of the other people, Thomas Jefferson or Teddy Roosevelt, the rest of these people, whether their statues should come down. I'll leave that to other people to debate. The Confederates, on the other hand, I draw a line. I draw a line in the sand and say, no, they should not be up. Or if they are, they need to be moved to a museum. You know, the Sons of the Confederacy can buy them and put them wherever they want on their own property if that's what, you know, they want to hold on to. But the bottom line here is that, first of all, they should not be on public land, any public land. And secondly, there ought to be a good faith effort made to portray these people for who they are. Why do people not know that Nathan Bedford Forrest, in addition to being a Confederate general, was the first Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan? Why do people not know that? The fact of the matter is, people should know it, but they don't, on account of they put a statue up to the guy in downtown Memphis, as if he's some kind of a hero. These people were not heroes. They may have been heroes to others in the Confederacy who wanted to continue to oppress black people. And remember that after slavery ended, there was virtually 100 years plus of Jim Crow segregation, not just in the South, but throughout this country. That's right. In New York, black people sometimes could not gain entry to a restaurant through the same entrance as white people, much less get served in some of these restaurants. Hattie McDaniel, who won an Academy Award for Gone with the Wind. Now, there's a lot of controversy about that. They pulled the movie from certain cable channels, whatever. Be that as it may, Hattie McDaniel was not allowed to attend the premiere of Gone with the Wind in Atlanta because it was held in an all-white theater. She couldn't even be buried in 1952 or 53, I forget which year it was. She couldn't be buried in the Hollywood Cemetery because that was reserved for whites only. That ain't the South, folks. That's California. This is the legacy of the Confederacy. The legacy of people who thought that they knew best how to perpetuate white supremacy by oppressing, and I emphasize the term oppressing, black people. That's the name of the game. And the pillars of white supremacy that are the 1,800 monuments, statues, and other symbols of the Confederacy, including the Confederate flag, need to be gone ASAP. Finally, myths and legends promoted by social media without even a small effort at historical research. We'll be right back. This is The Intersection. Welcome back to The Intersection. My name is Mark Riley, and thank you so much for listening. Join the conversation on my Facebook page at Mark Riley Media. If you've got something on your mind, message me on Facebook at Mark Riley Media. I want to talk now a bit about myths and legends and how quickly they spread on social media, in many cases, without the slightest bit of research or fact-checking. And I think what people sometimes don't realize is that false social media often reinforces the political views of the people who post in the first place. And by the way, that can happen with the left wing or the right wing. Even so, trying to debunk falsehoods is often like trying to put toothpaste back in the tube. Here are just a couple of examples. Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is certainly a polarizing figure. Her supporters love her, and the right wing wants to bring her down. She just easily won the Democratic primary in her home district, which includes the Bronx and Queens in New York City. Well, her enemies started circulating a tweet allegedly posted by AOC. It advocated that state governors should keep businesses closed until after the November election as a way to lessen Donald Trump's chances of victory. An image of the tweet was alleged to have been shared over 20,000 times before being deleted. Well, turns out not only was the tweet completely false, but there's no evidence that it was shared even once, let alone 20,000 times. Snopes rates this assertion false. AOC may be many things to many people, but dumb enough to post something like that on Twitter is not one of them. And I personally am very, very glad to see that she won re-election, apparently pretty handily. They haven't finished counting all the votes yet, but she seems to have won and won easily, which means she's going to be a thorn in the side of people who don't, in my judgment, have the interests of people of color in their hearts and minds for at least another 2 years. Example number two, Aunt Jemima. The brand, which is long a fixture on pancake mix boxes, syrup, etc., is in the news because the parent company has decided to pull the image from these containers. Along with that news is the false narrative that the woman who portrayed her died a millionaire. That's right. People are actually promoting the idea that the woman who portrayed Aunt Jemima died a millionaire, I guess making money off the portrayal. The facts are these. Nancy Green, born a slave, was hired to portray Aunt Jemima at the Chicago World's Fair in 1893. In addition to peddling the self-rising flower, she told tales from her time as a slave, reinforcing the myth that slavery wasn't really as bad as people thought. By the way, she won the role after auditioning with several other women. Until just before a very tragic death in 1923, she listed her occupation as housekeeper. Now, you tell me, how many housekeepers ended up being millionaires? In fact, one of the parts of this narrative is that she was the first black millionaire, which she was not. The first black millionaire, which I think most black people know, was Madam C.J. Walker. But that really is neither here nor there. There is no evidence that Nancy Green became a millionaire, that is, in any way, shape, or form. There are even questions about whether or not she was paid more than a pittance for her image, even though it's been associated with one of the most popular brands in America over the past century. And last but not least is the notion of Irish slavery. This one is being passed around as we speak, complete with a photo that purports to show Irish slaves in the U.S. crammed into what look like cages. Turns out, the picture wasn't even taken in the U.S. It was far more likely it was taken in Belgium. Be that as it may, one of the central narratives to Irish slavery is that the Irish at one point had it worse than the Africans who were brought to the New World in chains. Now, let's be really clear about this. The Irish were not slaves. They were indentured servants, and they certainly were not treated well in the U.S. or, for that matter, in the Caribbean. However, and this is a really big however, the Irish were never property, ever. As indentured servants, they could negotiate or buy their freedom after serving a set amount of time in peonage, usually 7 years. African slaves couldn't buy their freedom until much later. In addition, it's disingenuous at best to reference Irish slavery from the 17th and 18th centuries with a photograph when the camera was first invented in 1816, the 19th century. The moral of all these stories? Don't believe everything you read on social media, even if it's fitting your worldview. I was taught as a very, very young man, and I feel absolutely blessed that I went to a school founded by an abolitionist, I might add, but I went to a school that was actually encouraging of everyone in that school to question what they don't know or what they don't understand. Question it. And to question virtually everything. That stood me in really good stead when I started working in journalism, and my job was to question people, to interview them, to get some sense of who they were and why they did what they did. Now, I would say, and I, you know, other people might disagree with me about this, but I would say that when you see posts on social media, your first impulse ought to be to question. I mean, I've seen pictures of stuff that certainly comports with my worldview, but the first thing I'm thinking is that stuff must be photoshopped. And I look under the comments, and sure enough, there are several authoritative comments that say, yes, that picture was photoshopped, and they tell you where it was photoshopped from and whose head, of a person I certainly don't agree with necessarily, but whose head has been photoshopped. So you see, because I'm a person of a certain year, certain age, I have a tendency to question everything. And I have a tendency to do a little back research on stuff, even if I agree with it, just to make sure that whoever posted whatever got their facts straight. There's no reason why other people cannot do precisely the same thing. What was it that Marvin Gaye said? Believe half of what you see and none of what you hear. Well, I really believe that when it comes to social media, that little piece of a song, I think it was Heard It Through the Grapevine, that little piece of song holds true today. Don't believe everything you see. Don't believe everything you hear. And question the motives of people who tell you things that sound just a wee bit outlandish. The minute I saw that picture about Irish slavery, in Irish slavery, and then I saw that they started referencing 1625, I said, whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm even someone as unschooled as myself. No, they didn't have cameras in 1625. I knew that. Yet here's a picture that purports to show Irish slaves in cages going back that far. No, absolutely not. You can't get away with that sort of foolishness. Thank you so much for listening. The executive producer of The Intersection is Ms. Kim Jack Riley. Till we meet again, please stay safe and stay well.